If I'd wanted to work second shovel to some smooth-faced, politically appropriate fuck with half my experience and qualifications, I could have gone to the plains like everybody else. The whole reason I was out here in the first place was because I wanted my own dig. I wanted the chance to prove that something I believed in was right.
Did the others feel that strongly?
In the end. In the beginning, they signed up with me because they needed the work, and at the time no one else was hiring scratchers. But a couple of years living with contempt changes you, and they were young, most of them. That gives you energy for your anger.
I nodded. Could that be who we found in the nets? She looked away.
I suppose so.
How many were there on the team? People who could have come back here and opened the gate?
I don't know. About half a dozen of them were actually guild qualified. There were probably two or three of those who could have. Araboo, Wing maybe, Dasanapangsakul. They were all good. But on their own? Working backward from our notes? Working together?
She shook her head.
I don't know, Kovac. It was a different time, a team thing. I've got no idea how any of those people would perform under different circumstances. Kovac, I don't even know how I'll perform anymore.
A memory of her beneath the waterfall flickered unfairly off the comment. It coiled around itself in my guts. I groped after the thread of my thoughts. Well, there'll be DNA files for them in the guild archives at landfall.
Yes.
And we can run a DNA match from the bones.
Yes, I know.
But it's going to be hard to get through and access data in landfall from here. And to be honest, I'm not sure what purpose it'll serve. I don't much care who they are. I just want to know how they ended up in that net. She shivered.
If it's them...
She began, then stopped.
I don't want to know who it is, Kovac. I can live without that.
I thought about reaching for her, across the small space between our chairs. But sitting there, she seemed suddenly as gaunt and folded as the thing we had come here to unlock. I couldn't see a point of contact anywhere on her body that would not make my touch seem intrusive, overtly sexual, or just ridiculous. The moment passed. Died. I'm going to get some sleep, I said, standing up. You'd probably better do the same. Suchiati's going to want a crack of dawn start. She nodded vaguely. Most of her attention had slipped away from me. At a guess, she was staring down the barrel of her own past. I left her alone, amid the litter of torn technoglyph sketches. Chapter 21. I woke up groggy with either the radiation or the chemicals I'd taken to hold it down. There was gray light filtering through the Bubble Fab's dormitory window and a dream scuttling out the back of my head, half-seen.
Do you see, Wedgewolf? Do you see?
Cemeter? I lost it to the sound of enthusiastic teeth cleaning from the bathroom niche. Twisting my head, I saw Schneider toweling his hair dry with one hand while he scrubbed vigorously at his gums with a power brush held in the other.
Morning,
he frothed.
Morning.
I propped myself upright. What time is it?
Little after 5.
He made an apologetic shrug and turned to spit in the basin.
Wouldn't be up myself, but Jiang is out there bouncing around in some martial arts frenzy, and I'm a light sleeper.
I cocked my head and listened. From beyond the canvas synth flap, the Nurikam brought me the clear sounds of hard breathing and loose clothing snapping repeatedly taut. Fucking psycho, I grumbled.
Hey, he's in good company on this beach. I thought it was a requirement. Half the people you recruited are fucking psychos.
Yeah, but Jiang is the only one with insomnia, it appears. I stumbled upright, frowning at the time it was taking for the combat sleeve to get itself properly online. Maybe this was what Jiang Xianping was fighting. Sleeve damage is an unpleasant wake-up call, and however subtly it manifests itself, a harbinger of eventual mortality. Even with the faint twinges that come with the onset of age, the message is flashing numeral clear. Limited time remaining. Blink, blink.
Rush, snap.
Hey!
Right. I pressed my eyeballs hard with finger and thumb.
I'm awake now. You finished with that brush? Schneider handed the power brush over. I stabbed on a new head from the dispenser, pushed it to life, and stepped into the shower niche. Rise and shine. Zhang had powered down somewhat by the time I stepped, dressed and relatively clear-headed, through the dormitory flap to the central living space. He stood rooted, swiveling slightly from side to side and weaving a slow pattern of defensive configurations around him. The table and chairs on the living space had been cleared to one side to make room, and the main exit from the fab was bound back. Light streamed into the space from outside, tinged blue from the sand. I got a can of military-issue amphetamine cola from the dispenser, pulled the tab and sipped, watching.
"Was there something?"
Zhang asked, as his head shifted in my direction behind a wide-sweeping right-arm block. Sometime the previous night, he'd razored the Mayari sleeve's thick, dark hair back to an even 2 centimeters all over. The face the cut revealed was big-boned and hard. "You do this every morning?"
"Yes."
The syllable came out tight. Block, counter-strike, groin, and sternum. He was very fast when he wanted to be. "Impressive."
"Necessary."
Another death blow, probably to the temple, and delivered out of a combination of blocks that telegraphed retreat. Very nice.
"Every skill must be practiced, every act rehearsed. A blade is only a blade when it cuts."
I nodded. "Hayashi." The pattern slowed fractionally.
"You have read him?"
"Met him once." Zhang stopped and looked at me narrowly.
"You met Toro Hayashi?"
"I'm older than I look. We deployed together on Adoracion."
"You are an envoy?"
"Was." For a moment, he seemed unsure what to say. I wondered if he thought I was joking. Then he brought his arms forward, sheathed his right fist at chest height in the cup of his left hand, and bowed slightly over the grasp.
"Takashi-san, if I offended you with my talk of fear yesterday, I apologize. I am a fool."
"No problem. I wasn't offended. We all deal with it in different ways. You planning on breakfast?" He pointed across the living space to where the table had been pushed back to the canvas-synth wall. There was fresh fruit piled on a shallow bowl and what looked like slices of rye bread. "Mind if I join you?"
"I would be honored."
We were still eating when Schneider came back from wherever he'd been for the last 20 minutes.
"Meeting in the main fab,"
he said over his shoulder, disappearing into the dormitory. He emerged a minute later.
15 minutes. Tsuchiyari seems to think everyone should be there."
Then he was gone again. Zhang was half to his feet when I put out a hand and gestured him back to his seat. "Take it easy," he said. 15 minutes.
"I wish to shower and change,"
said Zhang, a little stiffly. "I'll tell him you're on your way. Finish your breakfast, for Christ's sake, and a couple of days from now it'll make you sick to your stomach just to swallow food. Enjoy the flavors while you can." He sat back down with a strange expression on his face.
"Do you mind, Takashi-san, if I ask you a question?"
"Why am I no longer an envoy?" I saw the confirmation in his eyes. Call it an ethical revelation. I was at Inanen.
"I have read about it."
"Hayashi again?" He nodded. "Yeah, well, Hayashi's account is pretty close, but he wasn't there. That's why he comes off ambiguous about the whole thing. Didn't feel fit to judge. I was there, and I'm eminently fit to judge. They fucked us. No one's too clear on whether they actually intended to or not, but I'm here to tell you that doesn't matter. My friends died, really died, when there was no need. That's what counts."
"Yet, as a soldier, surely you must..."
"Zhang, I don't want to disappoint you, but I try not to think of myself as a soldier anymore. I'm trying to evolve."
"Then what do you consider yourself?"
His voice stayed polite, but his demeanor had tightened, and his food was forgotten on his plate.
"What have you evolved into?"
I shrugged. "Difficult to say. Something better, at any rate. A paid killer, maybe?" The whites of his eyes flared. I sighed. "I'm sorry if that offends you, Zhang, but it's the truth. You probably don't want to hear it. Most soldiers don't. When you put on that uniform, you're saying, in effect, that you resign your right to make independent decisions about the universe and your relationship to it.
That is Quillism.
He all but reared back from the table as he said it. Maybe. That doesn't stop it being true. I couldn't quite work out why I was bothering with this man. Maybe it was something about his ninja calm, the way it begged to be shattered. Or maybe it was just being woken up early by his tightly controlled killing dance. Chiang, ask yourself, what are you going to do when your superior officer orders you to plasma bomb some hospital full of injured children?
There are certain actions...
No! The snap in my voice surprised me. Soldiers don't get to make those kinds of choices. Look out the window, Zhang. Mixed in with that black stuff you see blowing around out there, there's a thin coating of fat molecules that used to be people. Men, women, children, all vaporized by some soldier under orders from some superior officer because they were in the way.
That was a Kempist action.
Oh, please.
I would not carry out...
Then... You're no longer a soldier, Zhang. Soldiers follow orders, regardless. The moment you refuse to carry out an order, you're no longer a soldier. You're just a paid killer trying to renegotiate your contract. He got up.
I am going to change, he said coldly. Please present my apologies to Captain Sujiati for the delay.
Sure. I picked up a kiwi fruit from the table and bit through the skin. See you there. I watched him retreat to the other dormitory, then got up from the table and wandered out into the morning, still chewing the furred bitterness of the kiwi skin amid the fruit. Outside, the camp was coming slowly to life. On my way to the assembly fab, I spotted Amelie Vongsvath, crouched under one of the Najini's support struts, while Yvette Cruikshank helped her lift part of the hydraulic system clear for inspection. With Wardani bunking in her lab, the three remaining females had ended up sharing a fab, whether by accident or design, I didn't know. None of the male team members had tried for the fourth bunk. Cruikshank saw me and waved.
Sleep well? I called out.
She grinned back.
Like the fucking dead.
Hand was waiting at the door to the assembly fab, the clean angles of his face freshly shaven, the camellia chrome coveralls immaculate. There was a faint tang of spice in the air that I thought might come from something on his hair. He looked so much like a net ad for officer training that I could cheerfully have shot him in the face as soon as said good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant. How did you sleep?
Briefly.
Inside, three-quarters of the space was given over to the assembly hall, the rest walled off for hands use. In the assembly space... A dozen memory board-equipped chairs had been set out in an approximate ring, and Succiati was busy with a map projector, spinning up a table-sized central image of the beach and surroundings, punching in tags, and making notes on his own chair's board. He looked up as I came in.
Kovac, good. If you've got no objections, I'm going to send you out on the bike with Sun this morning.
I yawned.
Sounds like fun.
Yes, well, that isn't the primary purpose. I want to string a secondary ring of remotes a few kilometers back to give us a response edge, and while Sun's doing that, she can't be watching her own ass. You get the turret duty. I'll have Hansen and Cruikshank start at the north end and swing inland. You and Sun go south. Do the same thing.
He gave me a thin smile.
See if you can't arrange to meet somewhere in the middle.
I nodded.
Humor.
I took a seat and slumped in it. You want to watch that, Succiati? Stuff's addictive. Up on the seaward slopes of Dangrek's spine, the devastation at Sauberville was clearer. You could see where the fireball had blasted a cavity into the hook at the end of the peninsula and let the sea in, changing the whole shape of the coastline. Around the crater, smoke was still crawling into the sky, but from up here you could make out the myriad tiny fires that fed the flow. Dull red like the beacons used to flag potential flashpoints on a political map. Of the buildings, the city itself, there was nothing left at all.
You've got to hand it to Kemp, I said, mostly to the wind coming in off the sea. He doesn't mess around with decision-making by committee. There's no bigger picture with this guy. Soon as it looks like he's losing, bam, he just calls in the angel fire.
Sorry.
Sun Li Ping was still engrossed in the innards of the sentry system we had just planted.
You talking to me?
Not really.
Then you were talking to yourself?
Her brows arched over her work.
That's a bad sign, Kovac.
I grunted and shifted in the gunner's saddle. The grav bike was canted at an angle on the rough grass. Mounted sunjets cranked down to maintain a level bead on the landward horizon. They twitched from time to time, motion trackers chasing the wind through the grass, or maybe some small animal that had somehow managed not to die when the blast hit Somerville.
All right, we're done.
Sun closed up the inspection hatch and stood back, watching the turret reel drunkenly to its feet and turn to face the mountains. It firmed up as the ultra-vi battery snickered out of the upper carapace, as if it suddenly recalled its purpose in life. The hydraulic system settled it into a squat that took the bulk of the body below line of sight for anyone coming up this particular ridge. A fair weather sensor crept out of the armor below the gun segment and flexed in the air. The whole machine looked absurdly like a starved frog in hiding, testing the air with one especially emaciated foreleg. I chinned the contact mic.
Crickshank, this is Kovac. You paying attention?
Nothing but.
The rapid deployment commando came back laconic.
Where are you at, Kovac?
We have number 6 fed and watered. Moving on to site 5. We should have line of sight on you soon. Make sure you keep your tags where they can be read.
Relax, will you? I do this for a living.
That didn't save you last time, did it?
I heard her snort.
Low blow, man, low blow. How many times you been dead anyway, Kovac?
A few, I admitted.
So?
Her voice rose derisively.
Shut the fuck up.
See you soon, Crickshank.
Not if I get you in my sights first. Out.
Sun climbed aboard the bike.
She likes you,
she said over her shoulder.
Just for your information. Amelie and I spent most of last night hearing what she'd like to do to you in a locked escape pod.
Good to know. You weren't sworn to secrecy, then?
Sun fired up the motors, and the windshield snipped shut around us.
I think,
she said meditatively,
the idea was that one of us would tell you as soon as possible. Her family are from the Lyman Highlands back on Latimer, and from what I hear, the Lyman girls don't mess about when they want something plugging in.
She turned to look at me.
Her choice of words, not mine.
I grinned.
Of course she'll need to hurry.
Sun went on, busying herself with the controls.
In a few days, none of us'll have any libido left worth talking about.
I lost the grin. We lifted and coasted slowly along the seaward side of the ridge. The grav bike was a comfortable ride, even weighed down with loaded panniers, and with a windshield on, conversation was easy.
Do you think the archaeologue can open the gate as she claims?
Sun asked.
If anyone can.
If anyone can.
She repeated thoughtfully. I thought about the psychodynamic repairs I had done on Wardani, the bruised interior landscape I had had to open up, peeling it back like bandaging that had gone septic and stiffened into the flesh beneath, and there at the core, the tightly wired centeredness that had allowed her to survive the damage. She had wept when the opening took hold, but she cried wide-eyed like someone fighting the weight of drowsiness, blinking the tears out of her eyes, hands clenched into fists at her sides, teeth gritted. I woke her up, but she brought herself back.
"Scratch that," I said. "She can do it, no question."
"You show remarkable faith."
There was no criticism in Sun's voice that I could hear.
Strange in a man who works so hard at burying himself beneath the weight of disbelief.
It isn't faith, I said shortly. It's knowledge. There's a big difference.
Yet I understand envoy conditioning provides insights that readily transform the one into the other.
Who told you I was an envoy?
You did.
This time I thought I could detect a smile in Sun's voice.
Well, at least you told to pray and I was listening.
Very astute of you.
Thank you. Is my information accurate, then?
Not really, no. Where did you hear it?
My family is originally from Hun Hom. There we have a Chinese name for the envoys.
She made a short string of tightly sung syllables.
It means one who makes facts from belief.
I grunted.
I'd heard something similar on New Beijing a couple of decades ago. Most of the colonial cultures have built myths around the envoys at one time or another.
You sound unimpressed.
Well, it's a bad translation. What the envoys have is just an intuition enhancement system. You know, you're going out, it's not a bad day, but you take a jacket on impulse. Later it rains. How does that work? She looked over her shoulder, one eyebrow cocked.
Luck.
Could be luck. But what's more likely is that systems in your mind and body that you're not aware of measure the environment at some subconscious level, and just occasionally manage to squirt the message through all the superego programming. Envoy training takes that and refines it so your superego and subconscious get along better. It's nothing to do with belief. It's just a sense of something underlying. You make the connections, and from that you can assemble a skeleton model of the truth. Later on you go back and fill in the gaps. Gifted detectives have been doing it for centuries unaided. This is just a super-amped version. Suddenly I was tired of the words coming out of my mouth. The glib flow of human system specs that you could wrap yourself in to escape the emotional realities of what you did for a living. So tell me, son, how did you get from Hun home to here?
Not me, my parents. They were contract biosystems analysts. They came here on the Needlecast when the Hun home cooperatives bought into settling Sanction 4. Their personalities, I mean. DHF'd into custom-grown clones from Sino stock on Latimer. All part of the deal.
Are they still here? She hunched her shoulders slightly.
No. They retired to Latimer several years ago. The settlement contract paid very well.
You didn't want to go with them?
I was born on Sanction 4. This is my home.
Sun looked back at me again.
I imagine you have a problem understanding that.
Not really. I've seen worse places to belong.
Really?
Sure. Sharia for one. Right! Go right! The bike dipped and banked. Admiral responses from Sun in her new sleeve. I shifted in my saddle, scanning the hillscape. My hands went to the flying grips of the mounted sunjet set and jerked it down to manual height. On the move, it wasn't much good as an automated weapon without some very careful programming, and we hadn't had time for that. There's something moving out there. I chinned the mic. Crickshank, we've got movement across here. Want to join the party? The reply crisped back.
On our way. Stay tagged. Can you see it?
Asked Sun. If I could see it, I'd have shot it. What about the scope?
Nothing so far.
Oh, that's good.
I think...
We crested a hillock, and Sun's voice came back, cursing by the sound of it in Mandarin. She booted the bike sideways and swung about, creeping up another meter from the ground. Peering down over her shoulder, I saw what we'd been looking for. "What the fuck is that?" I whispered. On another scale, I might have thought I was looking at a recently hatched nest of the bioengineered maggots they use for cleaning wounds. The gray mass that writhed on the grass below us had the same slick, wet consistency and self-referential motion, like a million microscopic pairs of hands washing themselves and each other. But there would have been enough maggots here for every wound inflicted on Sanction 4 in the last month. We were looking at a sphere of seething activity over a meter across, pushed gently about on the hillside like a gas-filled balloon. Where the shadow of the bike fell across it, bulges formed on the surface and bulked upward, bursting like blisters with a soft popping and falling back into the substance of the main body.
"Look," Sun said quietly. "It likes us."
What the fuck is it?
I didn't know the first time you asked me.
She nudged the bike back to the slope we'd just crested and put us down. I lowered the sunjet discharge channels to focus on our new playmate.
Do you think this is far enough away?
She asked. Don't worry, I said grimly. If it even twitches this way, I'm going to blast it apart on general principles, whatever it is.
That strikes me as unsophisticated.
Yeah, well... Just call me Sujati. The thing, whatever it was, seemed to have calmed down now that we no longer cast a shadow on its surface. The internal writhing motion went on, but there was no sign of a coordinated lateral move in our direction. I leaned on the sunjet mounting and watched, wondering briefly if we weren't somehow still back in the Mandrake construct, looking at another probability dysfunction like the gray cloud that had obscured Sauberville while its fate was still undecided. A dull droning reached my ears. Here come the Blam Blam crew. I scanned the ridge northward, spotted the other bike, and Nurakem'd a close-up. Crickshank's hair bannered out against the sky from her perch behind the weaponry. They had the windshield powered back to a driver's cone for speed. Hansen drove hunched forward into it, intent. I was surprised at the warm rush the sight kicked off inside me. Wolf gene splice, I registered irritably. Never shake it. Good old Carrera. Never misses a trick, the old bastard.
We should cast this back to hand, Sun was saying. The cartel archives may have something on it.
Carrera's voice drifted through my mind.
The cartel have deployed...
I looked back at the seething gray mass with new eyes.
Fuck.
Hansen brought the bike to a juddering halt alongside us and leaned on the handlebars. His brow furrowed.
What?
We don't know what the fuck it is,
Sun broke in tartly. Yes, we do, I said. Chapter 22. Hand looked impassively at the projected image for a long moment after Sun froze the film. No one else was looking at the holodisplay anymore. Seated in the ring or crowding in at the Bubble Fab's door, they were looking at him.
Nanotech, right?
Hansen said it for everyone. Hand nodded. His face was a mask, but to the envoy-tuned senses I had deployed, the anger came smoking off him in waves.
Experimental nanotech, I said.
I thought that was a standard scare line, Hand. Nothing to worry about.
It usually is, he said evenly.
I've worked with military nanosystems, said Hansen, and I've never seen anything like that.
No, you wouldn't have.
Hand loosened slightly and leaned forward to gesture at the holodisplay.
This is new. What you're looking at here is a null configuration. The nanobes have no specific programming to follow.
So what are they doing?
Asked Amelie Vongsavath. Hand looked surprised.
Nothing. They are doing nothing, Mistress Vongsavath. Exactly that. They feed off the radiation from the blast. They reproduce at a modest rate, and they... exist. Those are the only design parameters.
Sounds harmless,
Crickshank said dubiously. I saw Suchiati and Hansen exchange glances.
Harmless, certainly, as things stand now.
Hand hit a stud on his chair's board, and the frozen image vanished.
Captain, I think it's best if we wrap this up for now. Would I be right in assuming the sensors we have strung should warn us of any unforeseen developments ahead of time?
Suchiati frowned.
Anything that moves will show up, he agreed. But...
excellent. Then we should all get back to work.
A murmur ran around the briefing circle. Someone snorted. Suchiati snapped icily for quiet. Hand stood up and pushed through the flap to his quarters. Ole Hansen jerked his chin after the executive, and a ripple of supportive muttering broke out. Suchiati reprised his shut-the-fuck-up frost and started handing out tasks. I waited it out. The members of the Dangrek team drifted out in ones and twos, the last of them ushered out by Suchiati. Tanya Wardani hovered briefly at the door to the Bubble Fab on her way out, looking in my direction, but Schneider said something in her ear, and the two of them followed the general flow. Suchiati gave me a hard stare when he saw I was staying, but he walked away. I gave it another couple of minutes, then got up and went to the flap of Hand's quarters. I touched the chime and walked in. Hand was stretched out on his camp bed, staring at the ceiling. He barely looked in my direction.
What do you want, Kovach?
I snapped out a chair and sat in it. Well, less tinsel than you're currently deploying would be a start.
I don't believe I've told any lies to anyone recently, and I'd try to keep track.
You haven't told much truth, either. Not to the grunts, anyway. And with spec ops, I think that's a mistake. They aren't stupid.
No, they aren't stupid.
He said it with a detachment of a botanist labeling specimens.
But they're paid, and that's as good or better.
I examined the side of my hand. I've been paid too, but that won't stop me ripping your throat out if I find you're trying to tinsel me. Silence. If the threat bothered him, it didn't show. So, I said at last, you gonna tell me what's going on with the nanotech?
Nothing is going on. What I told Mistress Vongsavath was accurate. The nanobes are in a null configuration because they are doing precisely nothing.
Come on, Hand, if they're doing nothing, then what are you so bent out of shape about?
He stared at the ceiling of the bubble fab for a while. He seemed fascinated by the dull gray lining of the bubble fab ceiling. I was on the point of getting up and hauling him bodily off the bed, but something in the envoy conditioning held me in place. Hand was working through something.
Do you know, he murmured, the great thing about wars like this?
Keeps the population from thinking too hard?
A faint smile flitted across his face.
The potential for innovation, he said.
The assertion seemed to give him sudden energy. He swung his feet off the bed and sat up, elbows on knees, hands clasped, his eyes bored into mine.
What do you think of the Protectorate, Kovach?
You're joking, right?
He shook his head.
No games, no entrapment. What's the Protectorate to you?
The skeletal grip of a corpse's hand around eggs trying to hatch?
Very lyrical, but I didn't ask you what Quell called it. I asked what you think.
I shrugged. I think she was right. Hand nodded.
Yes,
he said simply.
She was right. The human race has straddled the stars. We've plumbed the insides of a dimension we have no senses to perceive in order to do it. We've built societies on worlds so far apart that the fastest ships we have would take half a millennium to get from one side of our sphere of influence to the other. And you know how we did all that?
I think I've heard this speech.
The corporations did it. Not governments, not politicians, not this fucking joke Protectorate we pay lip service to. Corporate planning gave us the vision. Corporate investment paid for it, and corporate employees built it.
Let's hear it for the corporations. I pounded my palms together, half a dozen dry strokes.
Hand ignored it.
And when we were done, what happened? The UN came and they muzzled us. They stripped us of the powers they'd awarded us for the diaspora. They levied their taxes again. They rewrote their protocols. They castrated us.
You're breaking my heart, Hand.
You're not funny, Kovach. Do you have any idea what technological advances we might have made by now if that muzzle hadn't gone back on? Do you know how fast we were during the diaspora?
I've read about it.
In spaceflight, in cryogenics, in bioscience, in machine intelligence?
He ticked them off on bent-back fingers.
A century of advances in less than a decade. A global tetrameth rush for the entire scientific community. And it all stopped with the Protectorate protocols. We'd have fucking faster-than-light spaceflight by now if they hadn't stopped us. Guaranteed.
Easy to say now. I think you're omitting a few inconvenient historical details, but that's not really the point. You're trying to tell me the Protectorate has unwritten the protocols for you? Just so you can get this little war won at speed?
In essence, yes.
His hands made shaping motions in the space between his knees. It's not official, of course. No more than all those Protectorate dreadnoughts that aren't officially anywhere near Sanction 4. But unofficially, every member of the cartel has a mandate to push war-related product development to the hilt, and then further.
And what's that squirming around out there? Push to the hilt nanoware?
Hand compressed his lips.
S-U-S-L. Smart, ultra-short-lived nanobe systems.
Sounds promising. So what does it do?
I don't know.
Oh, fuff.
No.
He leaned forward.
I don't know. None of us does. It's a new front. They're calling it OPERNS. Open Program Environmentally Reactive Nanoscale System.
The OPERN system? That's just so fucking cute. And it's a weapon?
Of course it is.
So how does it work?
Kovach, you don't listen.
There was a dreary kind of enthusiasm building in his voice now.
It's an evolving system. Smart evolution. No one knows what it does.
Try to imagine what might have happened to life on Earth if DNA molecules could think in some rudimentary way. Imagine how fast evolution might have gotten us to where we are now. Now speed that up by a factor of a million or more, because when they say short-lived, they mean it. Last time I was briefed on the project, they had each generation down to less than a 4-minute lifespan. What does it do? Kovacs were only just starting to map what it can do. They've modeled it in high-speed MAI-generated constructs, and it comes out different every time. Once it built these robot guns like grasshoppers the size of a spider tank, but they could jump 70 meters into the air and come down firing accurately. Another time it turned into a spore cloud that dissolved carbon bond molecules on contact. Oh, good. It shouldn't take that turn out here. There's not the density of military personnel for it to be an evolutionary selective trait. But it could do pretty much anything else. Yes. The Mandrake exec looked at his hands. I would imagine so, once it goes active. And how long have we got before that happens? Han shrugged. Until it disturbs Sujiati's sentry systems. As soon as they fire on it, it starts evolving to cope. And if we go blast it now? Because I know that's going to be Sujiati's vote. With what? If we use the UV in the Degeni, it'll just be ready for the sentry systems that much faster. If we use something else, it'll evolve around that and probably go up against the sentries that much tougher and smarter. It's nanoware. You can't kill nanobes individually, and some always survive. Fuck, Kovacs, an 80% kill rate is what our labs work off as an evolutionary ideal. It's the principle of the thing. Some survive, the toughest motherfuckers, and those are the ones that work out how to beat you next time around. Anything, anything at all you do to kick it out of the null configuration just makes things worse.
There must be some way to shut it down.
Yes, there is. All you need are the project termination codes, which I don't have.
Whether from the radiation or the drugs, whatever it was, I felt suddenly tired. I stared at Han through gritted-up eyes. Nothing to say that wouldn't be a rant along the lines of Tanya Wardani's tirade against Sujiati the night before. Waste of warm air. You can't talk to people like that. Soldiers, corporate execs, politicians, all you can do is kill them. And even that rarely makes things any better. They just leave their shit behind and someone else to carry on. Han cleared his throat. If we're lucky, we'll be out of here before it gets very far advanced. If Gede is on our side, don't you mean? He smiled. If you like. You don't believe a word of that shit, Han. The smile was wiped away.
How would you know what I believe?
Operans. S-U-S-L. You know the acronyms. You know the construct run results. You know this fucking program, hardware and soft. Carrera warned us about nanotech deployment. You didn't blink. And now suddenly you're pissed off and scared. Something doesn't fit.
That's unfortunate.
He started to get up.
I've told you as much as I'm going to, Kovacs.
I beat him to his feet and drew one of the interface guns right-handed. It clung to my palm like something feeding.
Sit down.
He looked at the leveled smart gun.
Don't be ridiculous.
Then at my face, and his voice dried up. Sit down. He lowered himself carefully back to the bed.
If you harm me, Kovacs, you've lost everything. Your money on Latimer, your passage off-world.
From the sound of it, I don't look much like collecting at the moment anyway.
I'm backed up, Kovacs. Even if you kill me, it's a wasted bullet. They'll re-sleeve me in landfall and...
Have you ever been shot in the stomach? His eyes snapped to mine. He shut up. These are high-impact fragmentation slugs. Close-quarters anti-personnel load. I imagine you saw what they did to Deng's crew. They go in whole, and they come out like monomole shards. I shoot you in the gut, and it'll take you the best part of a day to die. Whatever they do with your stored self, you'll go through that here and now. I died that way once, and I'm telling you, it's something you want to avoid.
I think Captain Sujiati might have something to say about that.
Sujiati will do what I tell him, and so will the others. You didn't make any friends in that meeting, and they don't want to die at the hands of your evolving nanobes any more than I do. Now suppose we finish this conversation in a civilized fashion. I watched him measure the will in my eyes. and my gathered stance. He'd have some diplomatic psychosense conditioning, some learned skill at gauging these things. But envoy training has a built-in capacity to deceive that leaves most corporate BioWare standing. Envoys project pure from a base of synthetic belief. At that moment, I didn't even know myself whether I was going to shoot him or not. He read real intent, or something else cracked. I saw the moment cross his face. I put up the smart gun. I didn't know which way it would have gone. You very often don't. Being an envoy is like that.
"This doesn't go outside this room," he said. "I'll tell the others about SUSL, but the rest we keep at this level. Anything else will be counterproductive."
I raised an eyebrow. "That bad?"
"It would appear,"
he spoke slowly, as if the words tasted bad,
"that I have overextended myself. We've been set up."
"By?" "You wouldn't know them. Competitors." I seated myself again. "Another corporation?" He shook his head.
"Opern's is a Mandrake package. We brought in the SUSL specialist freelance, but the project is Mandrake's. Sealed up tight. These are execs inside Mandrake, jockeying for position. Colleagues."
The last word came out like spit. "You got a lot of colleagues like that?" That raised a grimace.
"You don't make friends in Mandrake, Kovach. Associates will back you as far as it pays them to. Beyond that, you're dead in the water if you trust anyone. Comes with the territory. I'm afraid I have miscalculated."
"So they deploy the Operin system in the hope you won't come back from Dangrik. Isn't that kind of short-sighted, in view of why we're here, I mean?" The Mandrake exec spread his hands.
"They don't know why we're here. The data's sealed in the Mandrake stack, my access only. It will have cost them every favor they own just to find out I'm down here in the first place."
"If they're looking to take you down here..." He nodded.
"Yeah."
I saw new reasons why he wouldn't want to take a bullet out here. I revised my estimate of the face-down. Hand hadn't cracked. He'd calculated. "How safe is your remote storage?"
"From outside Mandrake, pretty much impregnable. From inside?"
He looked at his hands.
"I don't know. We left in a hurry. The security codes are relatively old. Given time..."
He shrugged.
"Always about time, huh?"
"We could always pull back," I offered. "Use Carrera's incoming code to withdraw." Hans smiled tightly.
"Why do you think Carrera gave us that code? Experimental nanotech is locked up under cartel protocols. In order to deploy it, my enemies would have to have influence at War Council level. That means access to the authorization codes for the Wedge and anyone else fighting on the cartel side. Forget Carrera. Carrera's in their pocket. Even if it wasn't at the time Carrera gave it out, the incoming code is just a missile tag waiting to go operative now."
The tight smile again.
"And I understand the Wedge generally hit what they're shooting at."
"Yeah," I nodded. "Generally they do."
"So..."
Han got up and walked to the window flap opposite his bed.
"Now you know it all. Satisfied?"
I thought it through. "The only thing that gets us out of here in one piece is..."
"That's right."
He didn't look away from the window.
"A transmission detailing what we found and the serial number of the claim buoy deployed to market as Mandrake property. Those are the only things that'll put me back into the game at a level high enough to trump these infidels."
I sat there for a while longer, but he seemed to have finished, so I got up to leave. He still didn't look at me. Watching his face, I felt an unlooked-for twinge of sympathy for him. I knew what miscalculation felt like. At the exit flap, I paused.
"What is it?" he asked.
"Maybe you'd better say some prayers," I told him. "Might make you feel better." Chapter 23. Wardani worked herself gray. She attacked the gate's impassive folded density with a focus that bordered on fury. She sat for hours at a time, sketching glyphs and calculating their likely relation to each other. She speed-loaded technoglyph sequencing into the dull gray instant-access data chips, working the deck like a jazz pianist on Tetrameth.
She fired it through the assembly of synthesizer equipment around the gate and watched with arms wrapped tightly around herself as the control board sparked holographic protest at the alien protocol she imposed. She scanned the glyph paneling on the gate through 47 separate monitors for the scraps of response that might help her with the next sequence. She faced the lack of coherent animation the glyphs threw back at her with jaw set, and then gathered her notes and tramped back down the beach to the bubble fab to start all over again. When she was there, I stayed out of the way and watched her hunched figure through the fab flap from a vantage point on the loading hatch of the Nagini. Close-focus Nurikam reeled in the image and gave me her face intent over the sketchboard or the chiploader deck. When she went to the cave, I stood amid the chaos of discarded technoglyph sketching on the floor of the bubble fab and watched her on the wall of monitors. She wore her hair pulled severely back, but strands got out and rioted on her forehead. One usually made it down the side of her face and left me with a feeling I couldn't put in place. I watched the work and what it did to her. Sun and Hansen watched their remote sentry board in shifts. Suchiati watched the mouth of the cave, whether Wardani was working there or not. The rest of the crew watched half-scrambled satellite broadcasts, campus propaganda channels when they could get them for the laughs, government programming when they couldn't. Kemp's personal appearances drew jeers and mock shootings of the screen. Lapinay recruitment numbers drew applause and chant-alongs. Somewhere along the line, the spectrum of response got blurred into a general irony, and Kemp and Lapinay started getting each other's fan mail. Dupre and Cruikshank drew beads on Lapinay whenever she cropped up, and the whole crew had Kemp's ideological speeches down, chanting along with full body language and demagogue gestures. Mostly, whatever was on kick-fired much-needed laughter. Even Jiang joined in with a pale flicker of a smile now and then. Hand watched the ocean, angled south and east. Occasionally, I tipped my head back to the splatter of starfire across the night sky and wondered who was watching us. 2 days in, the remotes drew first blood on a nanobe colony. I was vomiting up my breakfast when the ultravibe battery cut loose. You could feel the thrum in your bones and the pit of your stomach, which didn't help much. 3 separate pulses, then nothing. I wiped my mouth clean, hit the bathroom niche's disposal stud, and went out onto the beach. The sky was nailed down gray to the horizon, only the persistent smoldering of Sauberville to mar it. No other smoke, no rinsed-out splash of fire glow to signify machine damage. Cruikshank was out in the open, sunjet unlimbered, staring up into the hills. I crossed to where she stood.
You feel that?
Yeah. I spat into the sand. My head was still pulsing, either from the heaving or the ultravibe fire. Looks like we've engaged. She glanced sideways at me.
You okay?
Threw up. Don't look so smug. A couple of days, you'll be at it yourself.
Thanks.
The gut-deep thrum again, sustained this time. It slopped through my insides. Collateral discharge, the spreading, non-specific recoil from the directed narrowcast wave the battery was throwing down. I gritted my teeth and closed my eyes.
That's the bead, said Cruikshank. The first 3 were tracking shots. Now it's locked on.
Good. The thrum leached out. I bent over and tried to snort one nostril clear of the little clots of vomit that were still lodged at the back of my nasal passages. Cruikshank looked on with interest.
Do you mind?
Oh, sorry. She looked away. I blasted the other nostril clear, spat again, and searched the horizon. Still nothing on the skyline. Little flecks of blood in the snot and vomit clots at my feet. Sense of something coming apart. Fuck. Where's Suchiati? She pointed toward the Nagini. There was a mobile crank ramp under the assault ship's nose, and Suchiati stood on it with Ole Hansen, apparently discussing some aspect of the vessel's forward battery. A short distance up the beach, Amelie Vongsavath sat on a low dune and watched. Dupre, Sun, and Jiang were either still at breakfast in the ship's galley or off doing something to kill the waiting. Cruikshank shaded her eyes and looked at the 2 men on the ramp.
I think our captain's been looking forward to this, she said reflectively. He's been rubbing up against that big bunch of guns every day since we got here. Look, he's smiling.
I trudged across to the ramp, riding out slow waves of nausea. Suchiati saw me coming and crouched down on the edge. No trace of the alleged smile.
It seems our time has run out.
Not yet. Han said it'll take the nanobes a few days to evolve suitable responses to the ultrabud. I'd say we're about halfway.
Then let's hope your archaeologue friend is similarly advanced. Have you talked to her recently?
Has anybody? He grimaced. Wardani hadn't been very communicative since the news about the Operin system broke. At mealtime, she ate for fuel and left. She shot down attempts at conversation with monosyllabic fire.
I'd appreciate a status report, said Suchiati.
On it. I went up the beach via Crickshank, trading a lineman handshake she'd shown me as I passed. It was applied reflex, but it gusted a little smile across my face, and the sickness in my guts receded a fraction. Something the envoys taught me. Reflex can touch some odd, deep places.
Talk to you?
Asked Amelie Vongsavath when I reached her vantage point. Yeah, I'll be back down here in a moment. Just want to check on our resident-driven woman. It didn't get much of a smile. I found Wardani slumped in a lounger at one side of the cave, glowering at the gate. Playback sequences flickered on the filigree screen, stretch deployed over her head. The data coil weaving at her side was cleared, motes of data circling forlornly at the top left corner where she had left them minimized. It was an unusual configuration. Most people crush the display motes flat to the projection surface when they're done. But either way, it was the electronic equivalent of sweeping an arm across your desk and dumping the contents all over the floor. On the monitors, I'd watched her do it time and again. The exasperated gesture made somehow elegant by the reversed upward sweep. It was something I liked watching.
"I'd rather you didn't ask the obvious question," she said.
"The nanobes have engaged." She nodded.
"Yeah. Felt it. What's that give us, about 3 or 4 days?
Han said 4 at the outside, so don't feel like you're under any kind of pressure here. That got a wan smile. Evidently, I was warming up. Getting anywhere?
That's the obvious question, Kovac.
Sorry. I found a packing case and perched on it. Suchiati's getting twitchy, though. He's looking for parameters.
I guess I'd better stop pissing about and just open this thing, then.
I mustered a smile of my own. That'd be good, yeah. Quiet. The gate sucked my attention.
It's there,
she muttered.
The wavelengths are right. The sound and vision glyphs check out. The math works. That is, as far as I understand the math, it works. I've backed up from what I know should happen, extrapolated, and this is what we did last time, near as I can remember. It should fucking work. I'm missing something. Something I've forgotten. Maybe something I had...
Her face twitched.
Battered out of me.
There was a hysterical snap in her voice as she shut up, an edge cutting back along the line of memories she couldn't afford. I scrambled after it. If someone's been here before us, could they have changed the settings in some way? She was silent for a while. I waited it out. Finally, she looked up.
Thanks.
She cleared her throat.
For the vote of confidence. But you know, it's kind of unlikely. Millions to one unlikely. No, I'm pretty sure I've just missed something.
But is it possible?
It's possible, Kovac. Anything's possible, but realistically, no. No one human could have done that.
Humans opened it, I pointed out.
Yeah. Kovac, a dog can open a door if it stands tall enough on its hind legs. But when was the last time you saw a dog take the hinges off a door and rehang it?
All right.
There's an order of competence here. Everything we've learned to do with Martian technology, reading the astrogation charts, activating the storm shelters, riding that metro system they found on Akruma's land, these are all things any ordinary adult Martians could do in their sleep. Basic tech, like driving a car or living in a house. This.
She gestured at the hunched spire on the other side of her battery of instruments.
This is the pinnacle of their technology. the only one we've found in 500 years of scratching around on more than 30 worlds.
Maybe we're just looking in the wrong places, pawing shiny plastic packing while we tread underfoot the delicate circuitry it once protected. She shot me a hard look.
What are you, a Wysinski convert?
I did some reading at Landfall. Not easy finding copies of his later stuff, but Mandrake has a pretty eclectic set of data stacks. According to what I saw, he was pretty convinced the whole guild search protocol is fucked.
He was bitter by the time he wrote that. It isn't easy to be a certified visionary one day and a purged dissident the next.
He predicted the gates, didn't he?
Pretty much. There were hints in some of the archive material his teams recovered at Bradbury. A couple of references to something called the Step Beyond. The guild chose to interpret that as a lyrical poet's take on hypercast technology. Back then we couldn't tell what we were reading. Epic poetry or weather reports, it all looked the same, and the guild were just happy if we could squeeze some raw meaning out. The Step Beyond, as a translation of hypercaster, was meaning snatched from the jaws of ignorance. If it referred to some piece of technology no one had ever seen, that was no use to anybody.
A swelling vibration spanned the cave. Dust filtered down from around the makeshift bracing. Wardani tipped a glance upward.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, better keep an eye on that. Hansen and Sun both reckon it'll stand reverberations a lot closer than the sentries on the inner ring, but then... I shrugged. Both of them have made at least one fatal mistake in the past. I'll get a ramp in here and check the roof isn't going to fall on you in your moment of triumph.
Thanks.
I shrugged again. In everyone's interests, really.
That's not what I meant.
Oh. I gestured, suddenly feeling clumsy. Look, you opened this thing before. You can do it again. Just a matter of time.
Which we don't have.
Tell me. I looked Envoy Rapid for some way to disrupt the spiraling gloom in her voice. If this really is the pinnacle of Martian technology, how come your team were able to crack it in the first place? I mean... I lifted my hands in appeal. She cracked another weary smile, and I wondered suddenly how hard the radiation poisoning and the chemical counterbalance were hitting her.
You still don't get it, do you, Kovac? These aren't humans we're talking about. They didn't think the way we do. Wysinski called it peeled-back democratic techno-access. It's like the storm shelters. Anyone could access them. Any Martian, that is, because, well, what's the point of building technology that some of your species might have trouble accessing?
You're right. That isn't human.
It's one of the reasons why Wysinski got into trouble with the Guild in the first place. He wrote a paper on the storm shelters. The science behind the shelters is actually quite complicated, but they'd been built in such a way that it didn't matter. The control systems were rendered back to a simplicity even we could operate. He called it a clear indication of species-wide unity, and he said it demonstrated that the concept of a Martian Imperium tearing itself apart in a colonial war was just so much bullshit.
Just didn't know when to shut up, huh?
That's one way of putting it.
So what was he arguing? A war against another race? Somebody we haven't run up against yet? Wardani shrugged.
That, or they just pulled out of this region of the galaxy and went somewhere else. He never really went far down either line of reasoning. Wysinski was an iconoclast. He was more concerned with tearing down the idiocies the Guild had already perpetrated than with constructing his own theories.
That's a surprisingly stupid way to behave for someone so bright.
Or surprisingly brave.
That's one way of putting it. Wardani shook her head.
Whatever. The point is, all the technology we've discovered that we understand, we can work.
She gestured at the banks of equipment ranged around the gate.
We have to synthesize the light from a Martian throat gland, and the sonics we think they produced. But if we understand it, we can make it work. You asked how come we were able to crack it last time. It was designed that way. Any Martian needing to get through this gate could open it. And that means, given this equipment and enough time, we can too.
The flickers of fight sparked beneath the words. She was back up. I nodded slowly, then slid off the packing case.
You going?
I've got to talk to Emily. You need anything? She looked at me strangely.
Nothing else, thanks.
She straightened up a little in the lounger.
I've got a couple more sequences to run through here. Then I'll be down to eat.
Good. See you then. Oh, I paused on my way out. What shall I say to Sujati? I need to tell him something.
Tell him I'll have this gate open inside 2 days.
Really?
She smiled. No.